Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. YouTubers, hi. Nikias, coming live from us for the eighth straight pod. From an undisclosed location in Las Vegas. Sweet looking nice man. Nice shirt. I see you big time. How are we doing? I hope you're doing well because it's time to hoop it up.
It is time to hoop it up indeed. And while you are happy to be here, excited to be here, my brother, I am so ready to go home. I have been in Las Vegas since I think July 6th. And I am leaving tonight, leaving a little bit after we record the pod. So cool. It has been a wonderful experience, both on the Summer League and the W All-Star front. We'll talk about both. It's been a whole lot of Vegas, though. It is a lot. It's been a lot of interaction, which I am thankful for. I've had a lot of fun, but goodness. I'm good with not seeing Vegas for, I guess, another month until we get the Commissioner's Cup championship game between the Aces and the Liberty. I might pop back out here for that. If not, I think everyone will understand if I stay home for that one. But anyway, let's hoop it up indeed. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it appears that you are going on folks with the pick and roll, and you may be in sicko mode. So, hey.
That's nasty work. We're going to let that slide, though. We're going to get to some NBA news first. The Phoenix Suns making some moves while we all wait for, I guess, one of the two big moves that are expected to happen before the next NBA season. But the Bobo signing is official, one-year deal, fully guaranteed. We'd imagine that's at the minimum. We also had a trade, the Suns trading campaign, a future second-round pick and cash to the San Antonio Spurs for a future protected second-round pick. I would guess that's just going to be a fake second that doesn't convey. A $6.5 million trade exception for campaign was created for Phoenix. And then in another move, the second time that they've done this offseason, trading a first-round pick swap for multiple second-round picks, this time with the Orlando Magic. So, any thoughts on Phoenix conjuring up picks and space out of almost nowhere?
I have thoughts on the trade. I thought you were going to, I mean, this is what, the record-setting eighth time, again, that we've started a pod with Bol Bol news. So, yay us. Hooray, Dunker Spot. I guess we're here for someone. We did. My thing with the trade is, and we're going to talk about hoops here in a second, but once I saw Bobby Marks say that the Suns are going to save a projected $26.4 million in luxury taxes next season by making this trade, I'm not going to lie to you, Nikias, I turned my brain right off.
Ah, okay.
That's the decision.
Like, we paying this, we ain't paying all this.
Like, oh, we can do that? Cool. I think that Phoenix, again, is trying to be creative and find ways to, you know, go all in for it, but also not hurt themselves too bad. To get a player like Bol Bol at that cost, probably a win. Now, what does he do rotation-wise? I don't know where the minutes are. But to have that kind of player in your program with upside, maybe you see something, maybe he takes, you know what I mean? Development could be there. Again, you're on minimum type contracts. Two thumbs up for me. Anytime you can get a talented prospect from a different situation into your group at a low cost, you win. The campaign part got me a little bit, though.
Okay.
Not purely from a basketball perspective, but just this kind of just being the new reality of this Phoenix Suns team and trying to, like, wrap up his portion of the program. Like, he earned the deal that he got with his play, and that deal also kind of ended his time in Phoenix. And it's like this weird, you know, my mind, the human element, it's unfortunate because, like, he found himself as a basketball player in Phoenix. The growth he had there was great. I think, his first four seasons, he played with four different teams, and then he spent 4 years in Phoenix. Like, that's a big contribution. If you're Phoenix, though, again, you look at this team, you look at who you acquired, you look at the personnel you have with Bradley Beal, with Devin Booker, with Kevin Durant. You look back, you see Jordan Goodwin. It's like, oh yeah, he can do that stuff. And then you kind of go and you go, we can save how much now? I can see how that math leads you to, hey, we appreciate you. We really do. We appreciate you. You're going to love it there. Nice folks, good culture, Some great breakfast tacos. You're gonna be good, man.
Great breakfast tacos is wild.
What intrigued me the most, though, Nikias, was the framing around this deal. All of a sudden, it was, okay, campaign got traded, and now it's Bradley Beal is going to be the starting point guard for the Phoenix Sun. I'm going to pause there.
Okay.
What does that mean to you? What does Bradley Beal as the Sun's starting point guard mean to you? And before you answer, I just find it funny. We live in this world of pushing back on positions and positionless basketball. But we also have this portion of the program where we hey, where's the point guard? Who's the point guard? This person's the point guard. And yes, I am pre-annoyed at the Suns need a point guard talk, just like I was annoyed with the Clippers need a point guard talk. But what does that mean to you when you see that?
Like, when I honestly, it doesn't mean that much, because I think we came into it knowing Bradley Beal, Devin Booker are going to be your primary ball handlers, almost regardless of who's going to be flanked beside them. So it didn't really matter. I do think with this move with campaign, and I'm glad you brought up Jordan Goodwin. I am a fan. I like what he showcased last year. We have to see how real the jumper is for him. But I think he can make solid reads and pick and roll. We have to see how real the shooting and, I guess, to a lesser degree, the finishing is for him. But, like, he kind of needs to be the fifth, I feel like. Or at least the best version of this team, I think, will have him as the fifth to start. Just so you can get that point of attack defense. And have, like, an actual point, if you care about the actual point guard thing. Like, Bradley Beal's still going to handle it more. Devin Booker's still going to handle it more. You can at least toss Jordan Goodwin on those really skilled point guards defensively and feel good. Because I think where it begins to mean something, if Bradley Beal's your point guard, is if they're starting Beal, Booker, insert wing here, Kevin Durant, and a center. And then it's like, okay, wait, who is Bradley Beal guarding now? That's where it gets a little trickier for me. But if this just means Jordan Goodwin's going to be in the starting lineup and he's technically going to be off the ball because Devin Booker and Bradley Beal are handling the primary reps anyway, then, like, it's just in name. Like, we kind of knew that already.
You see, them framing it that way tells me that Jordan Goodwin will not be in the starting lineup. Mm. But it also points to me that the most important thing for the Phoenix is who's the fifth. Who is the fifth person that fits with the four pieces we have? What is that skill set requiring? And you look at some of the moves they've made, which they've had to do, you know, around the margins. Players who do specific things. We have guys who can shoot. We have guys who can defend. We have some guys who can do both. We may not have size. There's options. And that's where I'm like, yeah, we could talk about this point guard deal. Or we could try and look at Phoenix's roster construction and be like, okay, what are they cooking up over there? How many options could they have for that fifth person? How important is that versus nailing the offense? Now, I will say this trade does like triple down how important it is for them to nail whatever their offensive concepts are going to be. You mentioned it, but the beauty of having Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal is because of how many different ways you can use them. And so that's my pushback on the point guard thing, because it's like, what's the usage going to be for that person? Mm-hmm. You know, you have Beal, Booker, Durant, who can come off screens, who can be involved in movement. How many dribble handoffs are you running? Pick and roll, all three of them can initiate. Like, there's just different options. So it's more, who's the best person that could fit around that? Mm-hmm. And so I found that interesting.
I got you. Like, I guess, who would you slot in early as the fifth?
I think the hope would be Josh Okogie.
Okay.
In theory, that way, hey, we have our defender. The shot's improved. He's aggressive. We feel good about that unit. And then, hey, if we need this, we can go with Eric Gordon with these guys. Or, hey, if we, you know what I mean? We kind of build off that, I think, would be the idea. Are they there yet? Not sure. But again, that speaks to they have to nail everything about the offense. Because if it's just going to be stagnant in a lot of one-on-one, then it's going to be loud voices asking for, hey, can we get a point guard in here?
I got you. And, like, again, this is why I think this is an interesting opportunity for Jordan Goodwin. Because, one, I just think he's one of the best point of attack defenders in the sport, as is Josh Okogie. So, like, if you want to go that route plus the continuity, like, I would not be surprised at all if he ends up getting the first crack at that. But I like Goodwin. That also allows them to keep Eric Gordon off the bench, so you just have that extra ball handler. Makes it a little bit easier to stagger and have multiple ball handlers still on the floor at the same time. If you want to maximize spacing with that second unit, I think also just keeping Goodwin tied to KD, Beal, Booker would make sense from a spacing standpoint. And so when you do go to Gordon, it's Gordon and Booker, or it's Gordon and Beal. You can kind of spread it out that way. I'm intrigued. I think on the pain front, though, I agree with you, like him kind of carving out some comfort and just some consistency in Phoenix, I think was really cool for him going to San Antonio. I think there is going to be an opportunity for him to be the backup point guard there. And I would assume he ends up on a better team than San Antonio by the time February rolls around. So we'll see. For Phoenix, though, between getting the protected second here and again getting 3 seconds from Orlando, I do wonder like what else they're eyeing by the time the trade deadline comes around. Because I think the trade exception is important, but also by giving up campaign, the only other big salary player that they have to trade now is DeAndre Ayton. Because I don't think you're not trading KD for obvious reasons. You just got Bradley Beal, so that's a no. You're not trading Devin Booker. I think beyond Ayton, everyone else is on the minimum, are they not? Or like minimum or early bird, something like that. So the trade optionality is going to be interesting. I think that's why they buffered and tried to get all those seconds so they can attach those to some guys and see if we do need to make some kind of tweak in the like 7 through 9 rotation spot, they can. So I'll keep an eye on that one. But this has been some really interesting maneuvering from Phoenix. It's been really cool to see them, one, make the Beal move, but kind of double down after the KD thing. Like, okay, cool. We now have an offseason. Let's really round this out. We don't have a ton of flexibility, but we do have this core that people are interested in playing with. Let's see what we can get. And between underrated veterans, longtime veterans like Eric Gordon, who just should have been a Phoenix Sun a very long time ago, but that's neither here nor there. You take the flyer on Bol Bol. You get all these second round picks in here so you can load up a little bit. Like, Phoenix is doing the best that they can with the limited amount of flexibility they have. So I do appreciate that. We'll see if it works. But that's been a really cool portion of it.
What's more important for Phoenix, the starter or the closer?
It's still going to be the closer, especially when you project forward for like the playoff stuff, because that's where it really hit them. Like, oh, you're just not someone that we have to worry about guarding, huh? Let's put two on Devin. Let's put two on KD / be physical KD. Make that guy punish us. And I think if they have that portion of it answered, it just becomes an entirely different dynamic in the postseason. And that's ultimately what they want. So that's where I go. Would you agree with that? Or are you more like, how do they kick this thing off? How quickly can they build chemistry?
It's closer and lineup optionality for me. How many different lineups can you build? And do you have the people that you know, okay, if we need this, we're going to go here? That type of beat.
Gotcha. On another quick NBA news note, more somber tone on this one, per Shams Charania of The Athletic, the NBA has granted the Bulls a $10.2 million disabled player exception for the season-ending loss of Lonzo Ball. Still struggling with lower body injuries, still trying to figure out what exactly is going on. It just stinks. We've talked about this on the pod before, so we won't hang here too long, but it really stinks what's happened to Lonzo. Like, the first half of that Chicago season was magical for him. Getting the big deal, knocking down threes all over the place, improving some inside the arc, the playmaking pop, the defense was wildly impressive for him on and off the ball. And for it to turn into this just really stinks. So I do hope that Lonzo is able to recover fully and we get to see him play basketball again. But even beyond that, just hope he's okay, period. The $10.2 million exception is interesting for Chicago. Like, I wonder who they would target. I would imagine just in the trade market on that point, which ties into a larger, how serious is Chicago about pushing with this core? That'll be a conversation we can have again on another day, but Chicago at least does have that flexibility moving forward. Well, for this season rather. On the summer league portion, we got some award announcements ahead of the championship game that's happening in about 3.5 hours as we record right now. So we won't have those live results in. But Houston draft pick, first round pick Cam Whitmore, winning summer league MVP. Heading into the title game, which has not been played yet, 20.4 points, 5.6 rebounds, 2.2 assists, 3 steals in his 5 games of summer league so far. Been a pretty impressive run for Cam.
What's impressed you the most, Nikias?
Honestly, it's been a little bit more dirty work. offensive rebounds and stuff, that popped for me in a way that I didn't expect it to, because like we know he can self-create. And so I think it's a mixture of the drives and what he's doing on second chances. I think that's really what's popped more for me. What's kind of caught your eye?
Well, the journey of Cam Whitmore to a degree in Summer League, because the first thing I had in their first Summer League game was he is going to get them up. But in the process of acknowledging that, you saw the effort, like rebounds, crashing, working to defend. Like, he gives the effort. So he's going to look to get them up, but he's also going to contribute in other ways. I found that to be fun. And then as Summer League kind of progressed, you saw settling in more. Hey, I can come off pick and roll and get right to a screen. I can get to a drive. I can do other things. I think that totality is fun, especially anytime you can see a player progress like that in that type of time frame, that's what you want to see in Summer League. So, you know, it's not just catch and hold. There were some moments where they, you know, would play at the top of the key, swing at the Cam Whitmore, quick drive and attack. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. This is some real basketball things here. This is not just person who can score, scores a lot at Summer League. So that's been pretty fun to see.
And I think just zooming out, and this is something we touched on before, but with Houston having the amount of wing talent on their roster, like sorting through, okay, what exactly are these minutes going to look like once the regular season rolls around? It's important that you see Cam being able to make those quick decisions where he can just kind of slide in. All right, cool. I can just catch and go or catch and shoot versus I need high usage to be able to get mine. And it's something that you've touched on a bunch about. Can you do this in a smaller package? And I think this Summer League run has at least given more credence to Cam being able to do that. Still have to see it in the regular season, obviously, but at least you can have a little bit more confidence. Okay, maybe he can just find his own points with crashing the glass or making some cuts or just some quick catch and goes when someone else tilts the defense versus if Cam's going to work in year one, he has to average 12 shots a game or something like that. So that's been encouraging. Congrats again to Cam. On a similar note, the all Summer League first and second teams were announced. On the first team, Keyonte George from the Utah Jazz, Sam Merrill for Cleveland, Cam Whitmore, he's the MVP, Hunter Tyson for Denver, who has just been insane this entire weekend. He gets the slot. Big Lando, Orlando Robinson, rounding out the first team. I've been impressed with what he's been able to do. He's getting them up, Steve. He's getting them up. Any first team thoughts before I get to the second team?
No, continue. Bask in your glory, sir.
Hey, man. Big Lando and Hunter, they've been getting after it. Anyway, second team, Max Christie from the Lakers, Javon Freeman Liberty from Chicago, Xavier Moon from the Clippers, Imani Bates from Cleveland. Slow start in the first game, but he's been lighting the Nets on fire since then. And Jabari Smith Jr. From Houston, and also Jalen Wilson from Brooklyn. So we got six members on the second team, which immediately threw me for a loop when I saw the announcement, until I saw the follow-up tweet in which Max Christie and Xavier Moon had a tie-in votes, which is why they both made the team. I don't know what the voting panel is, though. Like, surely there can be like some rock, paper, scissors or something to try to figure out who the second. But anyway, that's how we end up with six guys on the second team. So congrats to all of them. Just want to throw the quick news now out there. Did you have any closing Summer League thoughts?
Oh, well, I mean, I was a little surprised that Asar Thompson didn't get on those teams.
Yeah, because he's also been wildly good. But
he's been good, and he's played quite a few games, so I was a little surprised there. But otherwise, no real beefs. No real beefs. I understand it. It's been fun. Like, this is where you get to real Summer League hours. Real Summer League sicko season where, hey, you're going to see an excellent set get ran to tie a game and almost put it to overtime, and then a game ends on a foul call with 0.4 seconds left. Like, you're going to see that. You're going to see hot dog talk.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Because how do we get there? How did we get there?
No, we can't.
Okay. No. No glizzy talk. All right. Let's shift to the. Oh, Lord. Fair enough. Anyway, we can now shift to the W portion of the program. As All-Star Weekend is done, regular season starting back up on Tuesday night with a pair of games in the late slate. As I am still in Vegas, originally came here for Summer League, or the first portion of my trip was for Summer League, W All-Star happened this past weekend. I had a blast. It's still been a lot of Vegas, but this was done extremely well. There was so much space in Mandalay Bay and just the entire area. They had multiple events being held. Like, they'd have Jordan brand stuff and Jordan games happening in one place. They had WNBA Live in another spot. They had meetup places elsewhere. It was really well done. The turnout was insane. WNBA Live in particular was packed virtually every night or every day. I think it was a lot of fun. It was nice to see. Let's just say it was a little bit better handled than it was in Chicago last year. I'll frame it that way. But no, I really enjoyed myself. And I always enjoy being able to, you know, as we get into the media portion, like, it's always a joy being able to interact with the players in this kind of setting where it is a little bit looser. You also have, like, these stations set up for, like, the media availabilities where you can actually just talk to them for, like, 2-3 minutes if you want to. Or, you know, depending on what the crowd is. So, like, getting to just talk to Ezzie MacBagore for, like, 3 minutes. It's like, huh, this is neat. Getting to talk to Aaliyah Boston for almost 5 minutes. Like, you just don't get that in pre- or post-game stuff. And, like, I haven't, like, flown to Indiana to do, like, post-shoot-around things or stuff like that. So, like, it's cool to, like, get the players in a looser environment, chop it up. Also, just to see them out in their element. Like, being at a W Slam event and watching the Aces walk in and them just having a good time. Nothing wild or anything like that, but just having a good time. Like, you know what? This is cool. Like, these are humans that are really good at basketball versus they're just basketball players. But, like, that entire vibe was just really cool to me. So those are just my general, I had fun during the All-Star portion of things.
Well, hey, we're going to dig a little deeper because I'm glad you addressed it, because I wanted to ask you what the difference was between last year and this year. What were some of your favorite takeaways? I know you were able to speak to a lot of talented players. You got some great quotes. What was your favorite moment? What did you take away from the energy, the vibe of the event? I mean, you have boots on the ground. Lay it out for us.
I would say, again, for me, my favorite moment, I think, was just like the All-Star practice media day. And I think that was on the Friday, which was funny because we had all of that right before the skills competition / three-point shootout. So we were all just kind of at the arena for multiple hours straight, which is fine. Like, it was fun. And so, like, getting to ask Nneka Ogwumike about the state of WNBA media and seeing what her thoughts were about that. And then later asking Nneka about pick and roll defense and her just getting super in depth in that. And it's like, you know what? This is the kind of accessibility that I love about the W as a whole, but especially in a setting like this where it's just, here are 22 players. Let's just chop it up. And so asking Nneka about defense, asking Jewel Lloyd about how she's being defended this year. Like, we've had these conversations on and off air about how it feels like defense in the W shifted from last year. And so getting actual player insight about that, ask Sabrina about that as well. Aaliyah Boston is just a joy to talk to. She's just a joy, period. Just watching her interact with fans, watching her interact with other media members, like our conversation, I posted that on Twitter. She just gets it. And I can't remember who I replied to in my tweet. And I was like, I hope she never loses that. Like, it's just fun to interact. It's just a bunch of great women here. So, like, I really appreciated that portion of it. I think that'd be my major takeaway. It's just it's just a close-knit type vibe, honestly. And so I appreciate that versus, like, I'm glad, like, the players weren't annoyed by people asking stuff or fans coming up to them or anything like that. Like, I think to the WNBA Live event on Saturday, I think that was the one that Asia was at. And if you could have saw what the line to get into the room was when they knew Asia was going to be there, it's like that is the face of women's basketball. Point blank, period, end of discussion. Asia is a very, very special player, obviously, but that is a special person. And it shows in everything that she does. So it's been a really fulfilling weekend in that regard.
Very good. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it because you were there. All the vibes and energy look great. So let's dive into it. Start me off with the festivities, Nikias.
So we had the skills competition. And I think we gave our predictions on the last pod. I was like, you know, this feels like the Liberty can get it done. You brought up the Aces. And I was like, they have a great chance to win it. But I don't know. I didn't know what the vibe was going to be. And so naturally, Chelsea Gray just loses her mind in the first round. And then they beat the Liberty in the final by what, like 13 seconds or something ridiculous. I'm just like, how do the Aces win literally everything by double digits? That's not how it's supposed to work. Like, that's a wild concept to be.
It's wild that you snuck that in there, but continue.
But no, like, that was fun. And then the three-point shootout in which Sabrina Ionescu, I thought the three-point contest was going to be really good. And as we got the first round, what she did, what Samuel was able to do, like, I thought, okay, this is really setting up for something wild. I did not anticipate the greatest three-point shootout round in basketball history, basically, in which Sabrina misses her very first shot and then reels off 20 straight. And we get, like, I'm sitting with media as we're watching this. And, like, after the second rec, I'm just looking around like, are y'all seeing this? Like, am I tripping? She blazes through the end of the first rec. She knocks down all the shots in the second rec. She hits the starry ball and it touches nothing but bottoms. I was like, okay, she's locked in. Top rec cashes that. Then hits the second starry ball. I'm just like, oh my goodness. I think my tweet is something like Sabrina has lost her mind or something like that. It was close. If that's not verbatim, it's close. The tweet's on my timeline, whatever. I was like, what the heck am I witnessing right now? And like, poor Sammy Wickham has to follow that up. It's like, well, if she misses two shots, she's done. It's like, so on one hand, I'm like, this is the wildest shooting display I've ever seen. On the other hand, it's like, well, that just kills the suspense. We're going to know who won by the second rec at this point. So like, that was not even a downer because it just doesn't outweigh what Sabrina was able to do. I had her as the winner as we did our predictions. Nobody could have had that on the bingo card, though. I have never seen something like that.
Oh, no. It was one of the most incredible shooting displays that I have seen. And it's hard because I've watched it so many times. It's just like a minute of just shooting bliss. Just unbelievable. Make after make after make. You know, you don't want to be hyperbolic, but it was like almost like art to a degree. Like, it just kept going. It kept going. It kept going. Same shot, right up, in rhythm. And I just felt like it was so important, too. And I think about just like the history of the W All-Star three-point contest in 27 seasons. She's the 10th winner. It's been up and down. Last year, did you know where the three-point contest was?
Man, look.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
This used to be before the All-Star game, halftime of the All-Star game. The All-Star game has been in Vegas 3 times, Nikias, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's had 3 different versions of the three-point contest. 2019, they did an All-Star Friday night. 2021, I believe it was at halftime. 2023 was on a Friday afternoon. Seen it all.
Yeah.
But to have that moment as the W was able to get the three-point contest on Friday again,
mm-hmm.
to knock those shots down in front of that building with that energy. Now, if you Google the WNBA three-point contest, guess what you're going to see?
A whole lot of Sabrina.
You're going to see this everywhere. And I think that's just so important to have that moment on that stage. And now you saw, look at the complaints last year to this year. Now it's, why? Where was this? Why couldn't I watch this? I think that's a W.
Yeah, because last year, I think it was a cleaner time slot, but at least the people that were on the ground were very like, why is it being held here in a ballroom, basically? That was a whole thing. Again, we're not going to rehash the Chicago thing. Listen to last year's episode of the All-Star Festivities if you want to get deeper thoughts into that. But no, I'm with you. Like, this did definitely feel like a moment, especially in light of, like, I guess the conversation surrounding Sabrina over the past few days, getting the 2K cover, to turn it into all of this, and well, into that kind of performance, it at least moves the conversation a little bit. So, like, that portion of it is fun. But no, like, I'm glad that it's continuing to grow. We also got the announcement that next year's All-Star festivities will be in Phoenix. And I just kind of had my brow raised on that front because naturally Brittany Griner was asked about it. And it was a bunch of, we're going to put on a show, I can't wait to be there, et cetera. So I was like, okay, cool. Brittany's playing next year. Dope. That's all we need to That's what I took from it. Like, congratulations to Phoenix, obviously. They're hosting it again. Flair's like, okay, this is a lot of we and I, and I don't have anything that answers some questions. She's going to be back next year. And I think when she re-signed with Phoenix officially, like, it was a one-year deal, but, like, they're obviously going to bring her back. She's having a tremendous season. So that was a little undercurrent, but I'll take that for sure. As for the All-Star game itself, Team Stewart, I think it was, what, a 143-127 victory. That honestly, it didn't feel like that game was close for most of it.
No, it didn't. And before you continue to go on, because again, Nekias was there and he was the hashtag is big time. We'll get to it here shortly. Oh, yeah, buddy. Yeah, yeah. The lock in. I should have thought about Team Wilson being a bunch of Las Vegas Aces with an all-star game that was in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I probably should have baked that in. Like, I'm glad everyone had fun, but I probably should have baked that portion into it. Also, real quick, you out there. Do not go to any all-star game, no matter what the sport is, looking for defense. I just don't want to hear it anymore. You know what you're signing up for when you click play. Continue, Nekias.
Can I quickly respond to that portion? Because I do think, and we've talked about this, about the men's side. I do think there is a middle ground to be found between this is game five of the finals with 2 minutes left. We got to lock in, and like what last year's NBA All-Star game was.
No, me and you are we're having different conversations here. I'm talking about the people who use defense as a complaint about this game. You didn't actually look for defense in this game. No one goes to the All-Star game looking for defense. Continue. Yes, okay. We want competition, but come on now. You better look for defense in regular. Like, I don't want to hear it.
Well, you know, when you put it that way, that's. But yeah, Team Stewart just kind of jumped on Team Wilson. And I was a little surprised with how hot Asia came out in light of just literally what her weekend was. Like, just multiple appearances everywhere. And again, like, not trying to be funny, but like, again, there was the WNBA Live event. I mean, yeah, the WNBA Live event. There was the W Slam event because the latest issue of W Slam is on the Aces and their Big Four. I mean, it's about the team itself, but obviously the Big Four is going to be featured prominently in that one. A lot of my media friends got to be a part of that, so congrats to them as well. But based on everything that Asia had to do, for her to jump out in that first quarter, I think she had 9 points, and it was pretty efficient. It's like, okay, cool. She might bring it, but no. Team Stewart jumped on them. Jewel Lloyd setting the scoring record, eventually winning All-Star Game MVP with her 31-point performance. Sabrina quietly was fighting for it. She had a strong case. Like, after the first half, I was like, oh, she's hit a lot of threes, a lot of assists so far. Like, very quietly, she had a case and then just didn't take a lot of shots in the second half. Oh, go ahead.
I thought we were set up for a fun little triple threat match at the half. Because you had Brittany Griner's return and her performance. You had Jewel Lloyd shooting out of her mind with Sabrina also shooting out of her mind. But then yes. Jewel's like, no, it's mine. Like, I refreshed the, like, I remember I went to check back on the box scores. Like, let me just double check and see if my eyes are lying. And I was like, oh, this gap. Oh, yeah, this widened quickly. This is Jewel Lloyd's.
Yeah. Which was funny because the day before in media, it was on the podium. It was her, Kelsey Mitchell, Ezzy McBegor. And my apologies to the media member, but someone asked them about who do you think is more likely to really just gun for the MVP award. And like, Kelsey's like, nah, it ain't gonna be me. Jewel Lloyd just is like very slightly pointing at Ezzy beside her. It's like, just does not want. Just gave off the vibes like, I don't really care about this. I'm just trying to get some shots up. And so she drops 31. And post game, she was asked about it. And it's like, yeah, this was a goal of mine. I was like, that is not what you said yesterday. That is not what that is not at all what you conveyed literally 24 hours ago. I got a good chuckle out of that one. But no, shout out to the Jewel Lloyd performance. Her just like picking Chelsea Gray clean in the first half of the game. I was like, oh, so okay. So she might be a little bit more dialed in. Also, on the Brittany Griner front, one, just great to see her out there. And she got by far the loudest about round of cheers when they were doing the starter announcements and stuff. And well deserved. Glad to see her out there. Glad to see her get the reception that she got. Got a pair of dunks from Brittany Griner. She was taking some jumpers, taking some threes in this one. It's like, okay, this is cool. You know, this is interesting to watch. But also, her versus the Aces guards are just not something that I had on the bingo card heading into this one. Like, there was just the Chelsea 1v1 just ISO and Brittany got the nice reverse layup to go in the first quarter. And then late in the second half, it is Kelsey Plum fighting for her life, trying to box out BG. BG just has like arm on shoulder, pushing her down. And I'm just like, one, this is funny. Two, I know we ain't calling stuff in the All-Star game, but like, this is the most blatant example of a foul I may have ever seen. It just was not called. And then there was an earlier instance. I think it was Kelsey driving to the basket. And Brittany just wraps her up with one arm. And I think that was like the first foul of the game called. And everyone got a good laugh out of that. Like, that was funny. It was just nice seeing BG have a good time out there, to be honest. In addition to, she played well. And like up until like the midway point of the third quarter, like she had a strong case for All-Star Game MVP as well. On the Team Wilson front, just multiple shout outs to Kelsey Plum. One, played well, matched her scoring total. Two, as she announced after the game, I think it was Google and Under Armour both had separate, we will donate $1,000 if you type situations there with points and, well, with shots made and assists. And so she raised $16,000 for her performance for Child Haven, which was dope. And I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but the interaction that she had with a fan that's suffering through her own mental health struggles. And it's such a heartwarming story. The way that she's been able to connect with her, like Kelsey Plum just gets it. I'm going to give her the shout out for that as well. The only other thing I'd say for Team Wilson in regards to the actual game, like shout out the Atlanta Dream, because they seem to be gunning for, hey, let's get this comeback going. Ryan Howard just bombing away, knocking down some 4-point shots, getting some drives to go. Cheyenne Parker was having a blast whenever she checked in. Multiple ISOs, got some crossovers from her, some drives, some offensive rebounds. I'm like, yeah, she wants to be here. Alicia Gray also with some strong minutes. Like, I thought if Team Wilson was going to actually make the comeback, it was going to be led by that trio. They brought it. Just was not going to, ultimately just wasn't enough. But it ended up being a pretty fun game. I think those are my major takeaways from this one.
No, you'd love to see that. Did you have any thoughts about your MVP vote? Yep. Oh, wait. Did you have an MVP vote for the All-Star game?
I was one of the All-Star game MVP voters for the first time, which was very cool experience. There was a press conference with Kathy Engelbert before the game that they host every year before the game. But anyway, so we did that. She finishes the presser. Naturally, I asked Kathy about second spectrum access because I had to. But after that, I get pulled over by WPR. It's like, hey, da 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 da, would you like to vote? And it's like, well, yeah, I'll do that. That's cool. Let me know what the protocol was, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, huh, I did not expect this at all. Very cool. Thank you to Jewel Lloyd for making this an easy decision for me by the time it was time to turn in my vote, because she just bawled. But yeah, it was a cool opportunity. I am really appreciative of having that opportunity.
There we go. And we appreciate you. The hashtag is big time. speaking of big, real quick on the All-Star game, Kathy said, we're not doing trophy jokes ever again.
Yeah. She, we'll just say they did, but that was one of those like 90s era rec league trophies. Just a big bop.
I'm not going to hold you. Nikias, did you ever watch Guts, the show on Nick?
I didn't.
And so it was a competition. Anyways, they had the Aggro Crag trophy. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that big WNBA trophy. I was like, oh yeah, never again. Never again.
Go big or win home.
No, she was like, nah, Jewel, pick it up.
Hello. Also, Jewel Lloyd did say post-game that this weekend was her parents' 40th wedding anniversary, which congrats to them, obviously. And she said, I didn't get them a gift, but I guess this is going to count as the gift. So I guess the trophy is going with the Lloyd. So we'll, you know. Steve is like, nah, no, it ain't.
No, it might, but nah, I'm going to need that. You got to run me that gift, though. This is a great moment, but also, nah, I'm joking.
I'm so glad glad you brought that up. I'm glad I thought about that. We also had just multiple special guests in the post-game interviews. Like, Asia brings a baby to the podium. And she makes it clear very early on, this is not my baby. We are not starting any narratives whatsoever. And so Asia sits with the baby. Baby just chilling. Headphones, pacifier in, cool. The moment the first question was asked, baby starts crying. Asia's like, oh no. So she hops off the stage, goes off to the side, rocks the baby. Baby stops crying immediately. Everyone's just laughing, like, huh, that was quick. Asia sits back down. Baby's good. Answer continues. Baby starts crying again and just really starts wailing. I was like, oh no, this is unfortunate. So Asia eventually leaves, takes the baby to, I would assume, the baby's parents, or whatever, comes back. That had a good laugh out of that one. Also, as we wait after that round of player interviews were done, we get word that Arike Ogunbowale is coming up to the stage next. But it's not just Arike. It is Arike and her parents. I was like, huh, did not have this on the bingo card either. So we get a few questions in to Arike, and then we start asking her parents, like, hey, like, how are you enjoying the experience here? Like, how did you enjoy Arike's performance? What was it like taking her to games and stuff? Like, who'd she get a jumper from? I was like, yo, this is a real cool family moment here. I didn't expect this, but this is really cool, really wholesome. They seem to be having a good time. Arike got a good laugh out of it. I was like, this is what it's all about right here. This is dope. This is dope. But no, fun All-Star game festivities for sure. It is kind of wild that we had All-Star game on Saturday. Season starts back on Tuesday for some teams. And that was highlighted by the Neko Gumake and Nafisa Collier portion of media interviews on Saturday. On Friday, rather. And Fee was talking about, like, I love this, but also it is kind of a quick turnaround. We got a game on Tuesday. And Neko's like, y'all playing on Tuesday? And Fee's like, yeah, when y'all playing? Like, we ain't planning to play on Thursday. Like, we playing y'all. I was like, oh. So it's like, well, apparently, the Lynx are playing on Tuesday. And they'll be playing the Sparks on Thursday. So got a good laugh out of that. But it was also like, it would be cool if they got a longer break. But again, like, the league is still very much growing, trying to sort through some stuff. Next year is going to be a doozy since we have Olympic play. There's going to be an Olympic break. Kathy did say she still wants to maintain the 40-game schedule. Obviously, there will still be All-Star festivities, so I'm curious to see, like, how that's actually going to break down next year and how they split that up. But, you know, we will cross that bridge when we come to it. But all in all, a very successful stint in Vegas, and I'm excited to see what the second half of the season looks like. Did you have any other moments, plays, commercials, interviews, anything that popped for you during All-Star festivities this weekend?
I thought it was funny that during the skills challenge, Arike was like, hey, Satu, you shoot the threes. And then Arike was in the three-point contest and got to the finals. And then the finals didn't go the way she wanted to. But I thought that whole just like, I was like, oh, this is funny. Also, I feel bad for Sammy Wickham because she was shooting the ball.
She shot at things.
She was shooting that thing. And then Sabrina opened that up like that. And I was like, oh, man, again? Like, twice? Like, imagine if you're Sammy Wickham, right? You do the three-point contest, you lose to Allie Quigley. Okay, Allie Quigley, she won four times. You know, cool, whatever. What am I going to do? Yeah. You come back, and Sabrina hits that.
You mean to tell me I can miss one time in this entire conference? Like, all right, dog. Y'all can have it.
Oh, yeah. I'm never watching another three-point shootout for the rest of my life. I'm done.
I ain't even going to take threes. Oh, God. Also, on the three-point shootout note, shout out to DeShane Carrington. And, like, talked about this a little bit when the announcement came, like, shortly before we recorded the last spot, but it's neither here nor there. But, like, she had taken, I think, 36 threes heading into All-Star break. And it's like, huh, this is an interesting choice. She did well. I think it was, what, 18 for her in round one? Didn't end up making the finals because of what Sammy, Arike, Sabrina, what they did. But pretty decent showing. I did feel bad for Jackie Young, though.
Wait, time out. Before you say you feel bad, this is the second year in a row that the Aces guards have done this in the three-point contest. And I want to know what's going on. And honestly, and salute to Kelsey Plum. Love Kelsey Plum. What's going on in these competitions? The three-point contest last year, and then she hit the side of the backboard this year. She made up for it, but I was like, dang.
there was a missed layup in the skills comp for her. I'm just like, yo, hey, man. what is going on? But poor Jackie, it's funny. Talking to Coach Hammond a little bit on Friday, and she made note of Jackie, like, just her jumper. Like, obviously, she's worked it. She shot very well. Also, like, it's not the quickest load-up time. And so she was kind of joking about, like, you know, if Jackie can make it through all the racks, like, we're going to be proud. I guess she technically made it through all the racks. She did just skip the second starry ball during her round one performance, which, again, did not go great overall. So that was not great. But we know what kind of player Jackie Young is. But, yeah, that was an interesting time, to say the least. So shout out Team Aces for the skill competition. Shout out Sabrina again for the 3-point contest win. Shout out Team Stewart, who took this a little bit more seriously than Team Wilson did, according to multiple accounts. And they got a 16-point dub. Shout out to Jewel Lloyd for the All-Star Game MVP win. And since we are kind of at the midpoint of the season, I think it's fair that we go through some of our midseason awards on the W side. Don't think we've had this conversation yet, not in depth. Kind of sprinkling in some free throw questions about some of the awards. But now we can kind of see where we are and then kind of compare that towards the end of the season. So, Steve, we'll start with the big award. What would your MVP list look like right now?
You gonna start with me?
Yeah.
Let's go. Breanna Stewart's my MVP.
Okay.
It's weird to say, but it definitely feels like a career year for Stewie. I think we're first player in WNBA history to have 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 40 assists in their team's first 10 games. I just think she's so important to this Liberty team, especially as they've been trying to work and grow and learn how to play together, how to win, what we're going to do offensively and defensively. She's been the glue on both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. I don't think the defense gets as much attention as it could, but it's so important for their team, for her to be able to guard multiple positions, execute multiple schemes, weak side help. Offensively, obviously, she's been the engine. The different ways that they can use her, the times that they lean on her offensively, I want to say, what, career high in assists, points per game, and rebounds. Like, I don't know if this Liberty team is here without her having this specific season. So that's number one for me. Am I rolling through all mine, or how are we doing this?
Yeah, you can go through your list.
I have Asia Wilson at 2.
Okay.
To me, you think about the MVP season she had and realize she's scoring like a little more, rebounds about the same, blocks up a little, shooting better, more free throws. Defense is still great. Like nothing, like it's, Asia Wilson is incredible at basketball.
Yeah.
So I don't think I have to go too deeper into that. Alyssa Thomas is number 3 for me. What a season from Alyssa Thomas and the Sun, the work that she's done to keep them up there. First player to record back-to-back triple-doubles in the regular season in WNBA history? Mm-hmm. First to record 3 triple-doubles in a regular season in WNBA history? You know what's even wilder, Nikias?
Did she do that in like 8 days or something like that?
All that happened in a week.
Yeah.
From June 20th to June 27th, she had 3 triple-doubles. Now, that's 3 out of 4 games. There's only 4 games during that stretch. That's 3 out of 4 she had triple-doubles. So very impressive. Fully unleashed this year, been used in so many different ways. I think it's hard to measure the impact that she's had night in, night out for the Sun team. So I have her there. Jackie Young is 4 for me. Mm-hmm. Just the incredible shooting, the drives, the aggression, her play, her elevation just takes this Aces team to a different level. Mm-hmm. And they're already very good. The 5th, I had problems. I had struggles.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, who your fifth
was. I was in a headlock, and I found it interesting. I didn't anticipate it. I was like, oh, no, I got this. We're good. And I was like, ooh, who is the 5th? And so I was thinking, you know, midseason right now, I was thinking Elena Delladon, but I was like, eh. And I was like, is it a dream? It's a wing, isn't it? And then I was like, cool. I could do that. That's fine. 5 seed right there. We cool. Which wing is
which one?
I'm choosing between Satu or Arike, and I am like, wait, they are both very important. I went ahead and went with Satu to start.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Arike. I think Satu's growth has been huge. The rebound is important. The scoring's been great. I went back and forth a million times. Actually, you know what? Sticking with Satu. That's fine. Who you got?
Okay, so The bad news is we have the same five players. The good news, however,
I'm going on Enrique.
I was about to say the good news is we have slightly different orders. So there's at least some variety in here. Number one for me, I have Alyssa Thomas right now.
Mm.
And I think like one is very easy to use the cliche, like she's been the engine on both ends, but she's top three in assists, top five in rebounds, leading the league in triple doubles. She has also been, for my money, which it's all in Vegas at this point, but for my money, she's been the best defender in basketball. On top of everything that she's doing on the offensive end, and then having to assume even more, like had to assume more responsibility with Jonquel Jones being traded in the offseason. Had to assume even more responsibility and slide down a position once Breonna Jones went down for the year. And she has been phenomenal on both ends of the floor. I don't know if there is a player in the league that has the amount, just the imprint on both ends of the floor that Alyssa Thomas does. Like, if we're just ranking who's the best player in the league, like, I think Breonna Stewart is better than Alyssa Thomas. But what she's being asked to do on both ends and direct traffic on both ends and then also take on elite matchups and also roam as a helper and also switch on and also cross match and just get like the Chelsea Gray matchup against the Aces. And just the way she has to move around the chessboard is wild to me. And the Sun have also been very, very, very good this season. Top three team in the league. So I have Alyssa Thomas number one right now. That could change. We have another half to go, but that's where I'm at right now. Number two, I pretty much echo everything you said. I do have Breonna Stewart number two. You've made the joke or the analysis at this point throughout multiple watch parties that we've had with Liberty games where it's like, she has to save a lot for this Liberty team that's still trying to figure out things on both ends of the floor. Like, they've looked most comfortable defensively when they're switching. Breonna Stewart has been at the forefront of that and is able to guard multiple player types. Offensively, they look really good when the movement is hitting. She's at the forefront of that as a ball mover or someone that can come off of screens and knock down shots or drive or get to the free throw line. And when things slow down, she is the isolation or post-up shot creator, and she gets buckets. If there are fires to be put out based on the point of attack defense for the Liberty, it's a whole lot of Stewie helping down or at least pointing out instructions to make sure people are still matched up. I think she deserves her flowers there. I have her too. I have Asia at three. I think the defense has been great. It's a little bit of slippage from last year, in my opinion, but still great, still all defense level. Just a quick spoiler there. She's going to make a team for me. But she's been wild. The efficiency is obviously up. I've really been impressed with her passing ability and the passing growth that she showcased. I had a lot of fun watching her knock down threes last year. She hasn't taken or made as many this year. Hopefully that turns around the second half of the year, but that's just icing on the cake of what Asia is on both ends. So that's been fun. Four and five had me in a headlock because if it's just who's had the best season, I think Jackie Young is an easy number four. But as I was thinking through like MVP, it's like, do I want to have who I feel is like the second best or second most important player on the Aces ahead of someone that is like spearheading their team? That's where it got a little iffy for me. So, like, my four and five are Jackie and Satu, but, like, trying to figure out which order I want to put them in had me in the headlock for a little bit. So, I think I landed on Satu four, Jackie five. But, again, I echo what you, the growth that Satu's had. One, just being healthy has been fun. But her growth as a driver, her growth as a as a defender, in terms of her versatility, her own ball defense has gotten better as well. It's technically still a career high in three-point shooting for Satu, even though she is not knocking them down at a 40% clip like she was through the first 2-3 weeks of the season. But her willingness to get shots up has been impressive. And Steve, if you ever get bored enough, like just check out some of the plus-minus stuff with Satu or some of the on-off stuff with Satu. like the lineups with her and Arike without Natasha Howard or her on without those. Like just look at all of those like top three splits. And how that looks. Satu's numbers pop across the board when you do that. I was like, okay, I feel pretty good about this one. So Satu for Jackie, efficiency has been wild. Growth and aggression, the drives have hit. We don't need to say much more about the three-point shooting. The playmaking starting to pop as we head into the All-Star break. Defense has been solid. I don't think she's been at the all-defense level like I feel like she was last year, but she has taken on more on-ball responsibility this year. So like it's natural that you see some slippage there. But Jackie's been phenomenal. another all W candidate for me. That would be my top five.
It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. I'm switching back to Arike. Man, she does so much for the Wings. She plays 39.9 minutes a game. I'm joking, boy, folks. I need to be responsible. It's 37.2. But man, the engine, I think, opens up so much. I'm going to keep Arike for now.
Okay, that's fair. And I was able to ask her on Friday, like, what part of her defense has she been most proud of this year? And she said her ability to just pretty much the event creation, her steals. She feels like she's reading the floor a little bit better. So it was fun to get a little bit of insight on that regard. But the defense has perked up. We know what she does as a shot creator. She is the player on that roster that draws two to the ball when necessary. And opens up some things for Satu, for Natasha Howard, who's also having a really good season. So I think that's fair. Any other honorable mentions? I know you mentioned Elena Delladon. Anyone else?
I mean, I was just trying to build a list and trying to separate and understand. Like, I think Nneka Nwumike has been great. Nafisa Collier has been great. Jewel Lloyd has been great. I don't think the record's going to be there for them, barring a turnaround. Aaliyah Boston, does she ever get any consideration? But that they would have to be really good for that to ever happen. What would have to happen for Ryan Howard to get consideration, or for Alicia Gray to get consideration? That's where my head was like, okay, is there another person? Or is it just insert ace here?
Which, I mean, Kelsey and Chelsea can make some, it can make a little bit of noise for like fifth, but man, if you got three members of the same team on the MVP list, like, it's just a lot.
Honestly, it would have been an incredible bit for you to just list all the aces.
Number five, Candace Parker. That would have been a funny one. But for me, like, Elena Delladon, but she's naturally about to be out for a little bit. Due to the ankle injury, and also because I am myself, like, I do have the 13 games played minimum. So, like, if we would have did this next week, then it would have been kind of tough. But she was an honorable mention. Ryan Howard, the Dream do currently have the longest win streak in the W. They've won six straight. They have shot up the standings, and Ryan Howard has been the heartbeat of that run, averaging well over 24 points per game during the winning streak. So, I mean, she can make some noise for fifth if she keeps that up. Nafisa Collier was also someone that I had on my list for what she's been doing. Career high in points by a wide margin, just career high usage. She's already ran more pick and rolls this year than she has last year. I think at this point, her last full season and the one before that combined at this point. So the usage has definitely opened up for her. I'm with you on the record. I think they are technically a playoff team right now, but a little slow in the standings for my liking. So that's where we go there. Let's move to Defensive Player of the Year. I can go first with this one. This was, I technically have one honorable mention, Ezzie Mattbegor, but top three felt pretty easy for me, to be honest. Alyssa Thomas is number one for me. That is the best defender in basketball. Point blank, period. She's been the rock of an elite defense. Breonna Stewart, number two. And I have Asia Wilson, number three. The rim protection for Asia has been fun. Like, they've tried to get a little bit more aggressive with her, and I think you can afford to do so with Candace Parker back there, or when she's flanked with Kia Stokes, you can ramp that up a little bit. So again, Asia's still been very good, and the weak side rim protection in particular for her has been outstanding. Again, just a little bit of slippage in space, if I had to quibble about anything. And so, again, within the context of, well, she's only third in Defensive Player of the Year after winning it last year. Like, that's still an elite defender. So don't want to mix words there. But that's where I have her behind Breonna Stewart in light of what Stewie has done on the perimeter and also help side. That's where she gets a slight edge at two for me. But it's Alyssa Thomas's award to lose. I think that's where I am. What about you?
Why so strong on AT?
Switching scheme versatility, post defense, isolation defense, the quarterbacking, event creation, defensive rebounding. It all just kind of adds up for me.
Interesting. I had Asia Wilson. The defense is just too good. Right, for me, the versatility, the ability to guard multiple defenders. Think about your complaints with the Aces defense. Now imagine if Asia was not playing at this level.
Then they would be like, it's like sixth, like they were last year.
So I'm sticking with Asia. I think I had Stewie and then I had AT third. I wanted to put Ezzie Mattbegor on there, but I couldn't get there.
Yeah. And I do want to shout out, like, you think of Ezzy, you think of the blocks. But he really has become more disciplined defensively this year. And she has looked even better in space, which, fun one, when I was talking to her, I asked her, what do you think the most underrated part of your defense is? And she said her ability to switch out onto guards and flatten things out. She doesn't think she gets enough credit for that. I see it. She's been fun this year. So it's just a shame that, well, within the context of the award, it's a shame that AT, Stewie, and Asia are doing this. Because if there is any slippage from any of those three, I think Ezzy's just right there. But then also you look at what the Storm's defensive rating is right now. And like, that's not Ezzy's fault, obviously, but that also just kind of knocks things down a peg. It's also funny just on the Asia front very quickly before moving to the next award. Like, again, I think she's been great defensively this year, legitimately. I think it's been a little bit worse than last year. And the Aces just have the best defense in basketball this year. And it's like trying to go between those two thoughts. It's like that's pretty interesting. But no, I hear you on the Asia shout. I don't think it's a bad pick at all. Rookie of the year. I feel like number one, there will probably be some consensus. I'm curious to see what happens with two and three. Who did you imagine? Aaliyah Boston for rookie of the year for both of us?
Aaliyah Boston's number one. I got Diamond Miller number two. I got Jordan Horson number three.
Okay. Got you. With my 13 games played minimum, Diamond has played 12 games at this point. So she counts as an honorable mention for me right now. But I do think, like, on a per minute or per possession basis, she has easily been number two. So this is not a Diamond slight. This is just, you know, prerequisites and whatnot. But Aaliyah Boston is the easy number one. She's already proven to be one of the best players in the W. Don't have to spend a bunch of time there. Ivana Dorkic, two. Jordan Horston, three for me. I got two Storm. And I go Ivana over Jordan just because, like, she hasn't been bad defensively. I think Jordan's been better. I think the efficiency is so stark between the two, though. And I understand why that's the case for Jordan. So I don't hold it against her long term or anything. But, like, the shooting for Ivana has been very valuable in addition to the playmaking. Jordan just has not been able to get shots to go at this portion. And I think there's a wide enough gap between the efficiency to where I can have Ivana slightly ahead. But, you know, we've talked about this on the pod already. I love watching Jordan Horston play basketball. Would not surprise me at all if she shoots up. I guess she'd still be at three if Diamond Miller gets back at the two. She passes Ivana. But anyway, that's my top three right now. Any other rookies you want to shout out before we move?
I think Haley Jones has had a fun year. Zaya Cook has had some very fun moments during the season. Grace Berger coming along. Mm-hmm. But it's about it for me. How about you?
Dorca Juhas in Minnesota has been very good. I don't want to gas it, but she's been good. She's been very good for a rookie at the very least. She's really coming along, soaking up more minutes in light of Jessica Shepherd just still not being back. I really hope that she's okay. But Dorca's really come along. I echo your Haley Jones shout. The efficiency, not great. Still trying to find some things with the jumper. Also, just figuring out finishing on the W level. But I think that'll come along. The playmaking has been fun, though. Morgan Burch, also another 12 games casualty. But her defense at the level or higher has been really good. The shooting, the connect, the playmaking. She's having herself a solid rookie campaign as well. And also, just a quick shout out to Limong. Her three-point shooting has been very valuable for a Washington team that doesn't have a ton of it. So I will throw her a quick nod as well. Now let's have some fun. Sixth player of the year. What was your top three? Or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. That's fine.
Okay.
Alicia Clark.
Okay.
Was the winner for me. I just think the impact night in, night out on both ends of the floor, the defense that she brings with that lineup, the ability to space floor, knock down shots, guard multiple positions. I think that's important. This is number one for me. Dejanay Carrington's right there.
Okay.
For me. She was my number two. I think her growth has been very important for the Sun. I think the minutes are displaying it. I think she's doing very well to contribute with those minutes. Knocking down shots, aggressive with the drive, defending, fits right in with the Sun. So that might be a switch. But right now, it's Alicia Clark. Number three, I went Dana Evans.
Okay.
I went Dana Evans because it started just a whole bunch of just instant offense, good point guard play for the Sky. So I like those three. I had a couple on my others list, but I'm curious to see what you had.
Okay, well, we had the same top two. I also went with Alicia Clark. The shooting, the defense, the versatility, the line of versatility that she unlocks. Also, the post game for Alicia Clark. Very quietly having an elite season in that regard. Like, the volume is naturally lower. She's coming off the bench. She's not getting Asia usage. But when she posts up, the ball goes in the basket. That's just how that goes. I have really enjoyed her transition steals and just the quick duck ins from the corner when she's spaced. She's been able to find some points. She's made the impact plays. She's number one for me. Dejanay, the growth as a shooter, more comfort as a driver. She's at least flying around defensively. It isn't always perfect, naturally, but she's really giving great effort on that end. She's been a fun, consistent piece of this Connecticut puzzle. So I want to give her the shout. Number three, I had Kayla Thornton. Someone else completing, you know, unlocking a lot of line of versatility. She's gotten to close some games because of what her defense means, her ability to just find points as a cutter, offensive rebounder. Shot's been fine. The impact, some of the plus minus stuff has been fun. Kayla Thornton wound up being number three for me. You want to get into some shouts?
Maureen Yohannes was on my list. Just waiting for the play to pick up a little bit more. Shig Sutton, also on my list. Great scoring. Christy Wallace. Think she's been really good for the Fever. Expanding her game, more on-ball usage, aggressive, I feel like, offensively. That's who I had. What say you, sir?
Okay, I also had Christy Wallace on the list. I had Dana Evans on my list as well. Like, the efficiency is really the only thing that kept her from cracking my top three. But her point of attack defense has been nasty. Her drives have been important. The playmaking has popped. We know she can shoot. The shots just haven't fallen at this portion of the season. But she can stretch it from range. So once that perks up, would not be surprised at all if she shoots up my list. So we'll keep an eye on Dana in Chicago. Just a quick hat tip, because you know how I feel about two teammates in the six player of the year award stuff. Quick shout out to Kia Stokes, but I did have to choose one. So Alicia Clark got my nod because of the offense production. But Kia Stokes, again, I've said this before, like on a per possession basis, I think she's worthy of an all defensive spot. She didn't make one for me because she just doesn't play enough, but she's been that good. So just a shout out to her. We see what you're doing off the bench. Got to pick an ace. And so that's where it kind of falls for me. Most improved. Steve, do you have Jackie Young as your most improved player once again?
No. Why would I do that? Why would you win most improved back-to-back years? What kind of nonsense is that? Don't bring this here. You leave that over there. Don't bring this over here. Don't do that.
I mean, I'm just saying, she's improved quite a bit. Anyway, go ahead.
I had a tough time at the bottom. I'm going to reverse my order and go back to what I usually do. Alana Smith is my number three.
Gotcha.
Doubled the production. The blocks are there. The defense is there. Shots improving. Just done a little bit of everything for this guy. Ezzie Mabigore is number two for me. The defense speaks for itself. I've really enjoyed watching the offensive growth from her.
Yes.
I think
the drives.
The drives have been huge. Some fun inverted pick and roll. Just aggressive looking for a shot. I think the first 3 years of her career, she took 41 threes, made 16. So far this year, she's already taken 39 and made 13. Moving in the right direction. Been a fun part of the Storm campaign. Satu Sabli is my most improved pick.
Okay.
And I think, you know, right now, with her numbers, top 15 scorer, what, top five rebounder, on pace to be the eighth player in W history to average 17 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists. Six of those last 7 were MVPs, so she is headed in the right direction. What you got for the most improved? I cannot wait to hear this.
Boy. Well, before I get into what my actual top three is, I wound up cutting it to like a list of 8, and I think I tweeted it out. So the 8 players that I was deciding for at this point were in alphabetical order. Jordan Canada, Dejanay Carrington, Ezzie Mabigore, Michaela Onyewere, Satu Sabli, Carly Samuelson, Alana Smith, and Jackie Young. And so I will give you the early spoiler. Jackie didn't make my top three and didn't want to get yelled at on the pod. But it is worth noting the scoring / shooting growth from her and the playmaking starting to pop a little more. So she has gotten better, but did not make my top three. I also had Satu number one, and I had a tough time with it originally because I was like, okay, she has gotten better. Has she improved more than anyone, or has she just been healthier than she's ever been? Because these are things that we have seen from her before. But again, the drives have really hit. She has gotten better at that. The shooting has been better. The defense has gotten better. And this is in addition to more minutes, more stats, the rebounding, just something that she spoke about over the weekend as well, being proud of her rebounding growth and aggression there. So I am more comfortable with Satu at number one. And then obviously, if you just look at her box score and see last year versus this year, it's an easy case to make. But that's at least some of the internal debate that I had with her. But Satu number one, Alana Smith number two. And I went Mikayla number three. And I think because Phoenix has been as bad as they've been, unhealthy as they've been, coaching change, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I think her season is really just going to wind up flying under the radar. But she has taken meaningful steps in virtually every aspect of her game this year. Drives look better. Passing on the move looks better. The shot in general just looks so much better. And the 3-point percentage proves that, shooting at a high clip. Volume still isn't where you want it to be like a threat. But she is taking meaningful steps there. And defensively, she gets after it across multiple forward spots and some guard spots as well. I've really enjoyed her season. It just hasn't led to the wins. And again, there's just been a whole lot of stuff going on in Phoenix this year. But Mikayla deserves love for the strides that she's taken on both ends of the floor this year. So I have her three, and I already gave the other five shout outs. So don't have to rehash those. So that's where I'm at. It could change. We'll see. Let's get into some team talk really quickly to close this thing out. For the all W teams, they are positionless, both of them. I'll go very quickly. The top three, very obvious for me. Asia, Alyssa Thomas, Breonna Stewart, they're obviously going to get in. Jackie Young's first teamer for me as well. Number five was where I was like, huh, where do I want to go with this? And I was like, oh, wait, no. Nafisa Collier has been insane this season. So Jackie Young, Nafisa Collier, Breonna Stewart, Alyssa Thomas, Asia Wilson is my first team. My second team, I really had some trouble with the last player because there are just so many good ones. Yeah, so I was like, okay, cool. We're going to have NECA. We're going to have Satu. We're going to have Jewel Lloyd. And then I was like, all right, I have two aces that I feel good about and then a whole lot of other players that I feel feel good about. Like, I mentioned Satu already. Like, the efficiency just has been a headlock with Arike, but she has been very good. Natasha Howard has also been very good. Elena Deladon has also been very good. Now she's going to be out for a while. Ryan Howard is perked up. Brittany Griner has been very good. And then, hey, here's Chelsea Gray. Just, I think, third in assists, 50-40-90 season. And also, hey, here's Kelsey Plum after a slow start, now averaging 19 with 63 true shooting, 4 assists, turnovers are down. Best defense she's ever played. And they're 19-2. And it's like, well, do I want to put two aces here? Do I want to have one ace? And if so, is it Kelsey or is it Chelsea? Ah. So I currently have Kelsey and Chelsea on, which would make the aces the first team to ever have four all W players. I kind of want to remove one, though.
So I want to pause real quick as you get back to this.
Okay.
Didn't you yell at me for didn't you say you can't vote for two players on the same team to be like a six man of the year one time?
Yes.
So you got two Storm as rookie of the year and you got four aces on the all W teams.
Yeah, it's different. It's not a specific designation. Like there is a sixth player. All W is how good have you been, period. Rookie of the year is how good are you, period.
Okay. My bad. So
it's a little bit different. Just a little bit.
My bad.
But, if I had to take an ace off, like it would probably be Chelsea right now, which sounds wild because of the 50-40-90 plus the assist. I do think, like, Kelsey's been a better defender throughout this entire season. And now that shooting's perked up and she's knocking down, I think, 39% of those, the drives have been very important. She's gotten to the rim more than Chelsea has, more to the free throw line more than Chelsea has. So, like, I think she's having a better season on balance. So if I'm replacing Chelsea with anyone, I probably lean, like, it's probably EDD right now, but then that changes because she's out. But, like, that would probably be my last all-W squad selection. But, yeah. It's had me in a headlock. What say you, good sir?
Well, the first team, I have Breonna Stewart, Asia Wilson, Alyssa Thomas, Jackie Young, Arike Ogunbowale. The second team had me in a headlock. And I was like, okay, how much do I balance what I am seeing with my eyes? Does winning matter? where do I go back and forth with it? I didn't feel good at all. And that's not normally my process in this. Jewel Lloyd, Satu Sabali, Nafisa Collier, in. Mm-hmm. I also have Elena Deladon and Kelsey Plum.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there we go.
So those are my teams. I Brittany Griner was right there. The Dreamer right there. NECA was probably the hardest person to not have on this list. So I have a feeling my second team is going to change.
Yeah. Because NECA's been phenomenal, man.
Oh, she's been excellent.
She really has. The fact that she's even flirting with a career season at this stage of career is just wild. But okay, I got you. All defense, which is not positionless right now. Still two guards, two forwards in the center. Which immediately brought up like the Asia problem for me. It was like, huh, Asia is back to the four now, huh? That's kind of tough. So my first team, I have Jordan Canada and Brittany Sykes as my guards. I was really torn between Brittany Sykes and Ariel Atkins, who, you know, spoiler alert, she's going to make my second team. That can flip, but Jordan and Brittany on my first team. Breonna Stewart and Alyssa Thomas are my forwards right now. Ezzie Matt-McGore is my center. And on the all-defensive second team, it is Ariel Atkins, Alicia Gray as my guards, Nafisa Collier and Asia Wilson as my forwards, Candace Parker as my center.
Give me your second team, the last one more time.
Ariel Atkins, Alicia Gray, Nafisa Collier, Asia Wilson, Candace Parker.
Oh, you put Asia second team.
Yeah, it's been forward Asia this year. So she's been playing alongside Candace, and I don't think she's, you know, she was third in defensive player of the year for me behind Alyssa and Breonna Stewart. So that's just how that breaks down.
You are in an undisclosed location in Vegas, though. So just curious. First team for me, Brittany Sykes. I still have Natasha Cloud, okay. Asia Wilson, Breonna Stewart, Brittany Griner. Second team for me, Ariel Atkins, Jordan Canada, Alyssa Thomas, Ezzie Matt-McGore. I still have Shakira Austin.
Okay.
She gonna be back at some point. That defense is too good.
She gonna be back at some point is amazing. Did you have any shout outs you wanted to get to?
No. Did you?
I already made the Kia Stokes note earlier. Aaliyah Boston has been good, very good defensively, and like great for a rookie. Big, if you want to throw that superlative out there. Very good. Can't quite get to all defense level. Brittany Griner was a shout out because I think the rim protection has been important. Scheme versatility hasn't been there. And overall, that Mercury defense just has not been very good. I don't think that's her fault because the point of attack stuff is kind of in Phoenix. But couldn't quite get there. Natasha Howard was someone that I also considered at the forward spot. Who else? Benaja Laney is someone else I want to shout out for all defense. It's just trying to figure out, okay, is she a guard or is she a forward? If she's a forward, then there's just no chance. I'm sorry. If she's a guard, that gets a little bit more interesting. But she's been very important for that Liberty defense as well, especially with the amount of switching that they do. Like, she just takes on tough assignments first, but that's also there. I think that's all I have right now on the shout-out front. We'll see what the second half of the season looks like. And finally, all rookie is positionless. Your top five rookies to this point. I can go very quickly. Aaliyah Boston, duh. Ivana Dorkic, duh. Jordan Horston, duh. Dorka Juhas, and I wound up with Haley Jones as my fifth. Again, 13 games played minimum for me personally. Diamond Miller has only played 12 games to this point, so that is literally the only reason she is not on my list. Otherwise, she would be second in Rookie of the Year, and she would easily be an all-rookie team selection for me, but that's where I landed. You're all-rookie team, sir.
Aaliyah Boston, Diamond Miller, Jordan Horston, Haley Jones, Zyka.
Okay. Sounds good. Do you have free throws?
I have a couple for you.
Okay.
Tyler Hero or Tyrese Maxey?
God, I'm so Tyrese Maxey is better. And I think he's more projectable to like stardom because of his ability to get to the rim almost whenever he wants to. Versus Tyler Hero. I go Maxey.
Okay, very good. Power rank these potential airplane experiences, Nikias.
Oh, no.
You are having to travel with the person who says people are not real in the back. You are in first class on that flight where all the Taylor Swift fans were delayed and started singing.
Oh, God.
Or you're going coast to coast in a middle seat. Which one do you choose?
Which one do I choose?
Yep, pick one.
Probably the person that says there are unreal people on the flight.
Now, keep in mind, this scenario, she does not get kicked off the plane, and you have to talk to her the whole flight.
Oh, God. Oh, geez. Well, that probably becomes the Taylor Swift one, I think. Put on really? Some headphones, pull up, and just pull up some clips on the laptop. I have three younger brothers. I at least temporarily grew up in a house with three younger brothers that are loud and wild and stuff. I know how to ignore things. And that would be not a fun experience, but at least I can do that and just, again, like pull up Synergy or something on my laptop. I'll watch some games and then I can just tweet about how annoyed I am. But I'm not going coast to coast in the middle seat. I'm sorry.
Okay, I understand. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought for a second you were going to say, we used to sing Taylor Swift. No, I was like, boy, we have found something here at the end of this podcast. No, very good. All right, my final free throw for you. Nikias, just once we're done with this, just make sure to send me that address so I can see this lunchbox I got for you. Be on the lookout for it.
Oh, I am concerned. Am I getting packed up? What's the bit?
No, it's from Chattanooga.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Tucker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Naturally, if you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to JJ Redick's channel if you haven't already. I think one episode per week of our two episode portion is on the YouTube channel, so check us out. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions or just talking about tweets that we don't want to deal with on our natural timeline. So have some fun with us. Join the Dunker Spot online watch parties that we host. We're going to be back to watching W, especially since the summer league portion is over by the time you hear this. But back to W basketball. Slam Ball is coming up very soon. So we will be watching Slam Ball, or I will be watching Slam Ball if Steve doesn't want to watch Slam Ball. But Slam Ball will be watched in the room at some point. We're watching wrestling, some reality television. We've done some 2K streams. We've done some FIFA streams. We do a little bit of everything in these watch parties. So come rock with us. The link should be in the description. It's hyperlinked. If it is, just click on that, enter your information. It's free, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free with absolutely no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Sabrina said y'all gonna leave me alone about that cover, and I can do the four finger thing now.